Hello, .NET members, readers, and listeners. My name is John Moore, and this is the ProWrestling.net All Access audio review for the NXT show that aired November 1st, 2017 on the WWE Network. After the ad break for non-members, I'll be going over my full audio review for the NXT show that featured a tag team title match between the Authors of Pain and Sanity. Now, starting to review with my quick thoughts, NXT continues to roll pretty strong. It's the most enjoyable wrestling show to watch on TV weekly. Now, Raw and SmackDown aren't horrible by any means, but there's just a lot of needless filler on these shows to make some of those segments just simply drag. And 205 Live, that's the definition of being a drag. NXT only gets 1 hour per week, but they make the most of that hour. They make sure to make all of its segments meaningful without insulting the intelligence of the viewers in regards to continuity. They also utilize a variation on the, quote, SmackDown 6 formula that was popularized by Paul Heyman back in around 2004, where they focus around about six main eventers to create a very strong main event scene. They also, in that formula, have a very well-developed mid and undercard so they can pivot in and out players from that main event six whenever they so please. And it works a little differently in NXT because when they get pulled to the main roster, you can insert some of these strong mid-card acts into the main event scene. Enhancement matches on the show, they actually enhance things as opposed to being, as I mentioned, filler. NXT wasn't this good last year. It was mostly filler matches when they were airing house shows for some strange reason. They figured out a pattern now after WrestleMania, and I believe Triple H had mentioned it in a conference call one time before the huge NXT reboot that NXT needed a reboot. It was getting pretty dull, to be honest. The NXT TakeOver shows continue to be great. It was just for the longest time, the NXT weekly show was very missable. But this show is just very effective and compelling to watch now. And I'm so happy that this show exists on television in this form. In that 1 hour, WWE is also able to get their network, action figures, KFC, Rockin' League, and all their et cetera plugs in. That's the power of efficiency, and I love it. Now, moving on to the review, if you would like to follow along with me, you can check out my written review, should you do it, which is on the main page by now. You can also find it by going into the TV reviews drop-down box that is on the ProWrestling.net site. I'll be using the written review as notes and as an outline, so you can follow along as well through those notes if you so please. Now, without further ado, let's get into the audio review. This week's NXT episode was taped October 4th, 2017 in Winter Park, Florida at Full Sail University. There was no intro teaser this week. We were just straight into the show, so the intro theme played. Mauro Ranallo, Percy Watson, and Nigel McGuinness checked in on commentary from the commentary table. Nigel cut to a Drew McIntyre tweet saying that Andrade Almas has finally grown a set, and William Regal responded to the tweet with a tweet of his own by saying he's booked Drew McIntyre versus Andrade Almas at NXT TakeOver Houston. And they also hyped that Andrade Almas and Drew McIntyre will be appearing on this show for a contract signing. So after that, our first match of the night was Tainara Conti versus Nikki Cross. Before the match, we had Tainara Conti come out, and she was wearing her judo gi over her ring gear. They sort of promote her as a judo practitioner, a black belt in judo. So good for her. One thing I noted was before she entered the ring, she did the traditional martial arts bow that you do in respect to the ring that you compete in. And I noted that that's part of the reason why Quinn Moose Ojinaka on the TNA show, the Impact Wrestling show, deserved to be beat up by an MMA GM because of, for one, he was disrespecting the mat, as King Mo had pointed out on last week's episode. And I didn't want to allude to a Impact Wrestling thing, but it was timely, and I had to mention it. Nikki Cross came out, and before she entered the ring, she had stared at the NXT Women's Championship, which was randomly placed on a pedestal there, and she treated it like it was her precious, like Gollum did in The Lord of the Rings. But which is pretty solid. That's the Nikki Cross character. She's kind of a cycle, and she as also tends to show very sadistic and masochistic tendencies, that which is what all the Sanity members do. So very well done character work. So the first match was Tainara Conti versus Nikki Cross, and this match was pretty one-sided. Conti did get some offense in for a little while by sneaking in like a judo hold or two, but this was pretty much Nikki Cross dominating. So she had hit Conti with a Scorpion Death Drop and then a Fisherman's Neck Breaker. If you remember on the main roster, it's the Paige Turner. It's a finisher that Paige was using for a while. But Nikki Cross defeated Tainara Conti via pinfall in 2 minutes and 34 seconds. After that match, they had a shot of Paul Ellering standing in front of the Authors of Pain locker room, and he was clutching his hands together like everything was going according to plan, because that's how Paul Ellering poses. But Paul Ellering's a great manager, simple and effective and old school. They also told us that not Johnny Gargano will be facing Fabian Aichner after the commercial. So going back to the Nikki Cross and Tainara Conti match, as I said, one-sided. But like I said, it wasn't a waste of time because this was tying up a loose end from a couple weeks ago, where Tainara Conti was sent to the ring by Adam Cole to interfere in Nikki Cross's match because Nikki Cross is a member of Sanity and Adam Cole wants to terrorize Sanity. This was Nikki Cross's chance to get a little revenge, and it made a lot of sense. Like I said, all these segments in NXT just make a lot of sense. It's fun to watch a show that makes a lot of sense. There was the commercial break, and after the commercial break, we were introduced to Power Trip, who was one of the bands providing the theme music for NXT TakeOver Houston. Mauro then cut to Chrissy St. Cloud interviewing Mercedes Martinez. After her elimination from the match last week. And Cloud wanted Mercedes Martinez's prediction for the NXT Women's Championship 4-Way. And instead, Mercedes Martinez decided to throw some shade on Ember Moon by saying that Ember Moon doesn't win big matches. So I believe this might be setting up a Ember Moon versus Mercedes Martinez match, either for next week or 2 weeks from now. Because 3 weeks from, or after 2 weeks from now would be NXT TakeOver. After that segment, we have Fabian Aichner making his way to the ring. Mauro Ranallo pointed out how he did compete in the Cruiserweight Classic and he was just below 205, but since then he's gained a lot of muscle weight and is now a heavyweight. So Mauro called Aichner and a quote, agile, sorry, at heavyweight. Agile heavyweight. And as I pointed out, Fabian Aichner, that dude knows what's up. All you have to do in WWE these days when you're a cruiserweight is gain a little bit of weight, become a heavyweight if possible, and you can avoid 205 live hell. But yeah, that's just a lame joke, but it's true. He gained enough weight to wait out of 205 Live, and now he's in a much more productive show where he gets to show off his skills in a better setting. And as I noted, I was just hyped up on Fabian Aichner due to Darren Gutteridge, .NET staffer Darren Gutteridge, who is currently on a break from pro wrestling. He was burned out on pro wrestling, so I just call it he's on .NET sabbatical. He was and Hayden Gleed were doing progress wrestling reviews, and Darren was very high on Fabian Aichner, and justifyingly so. Fabian Aichner is very good. So just imagine Fabian Aichner versus Johnny Gargano. And Johnny Gargano is one of those guys, no matter who he's wrestling, you know you're going to be getting a good match. Hell, Johnny Gargano versus Riddick Moss, a pretty unknown guy, was very entertaining a couple weeks ago. And they're continuing to tell this very intriguing story with Johnny Gargano. But before I get into that, our second match of the night was Fabian Aichner versus Johnny Gargano. And as was assumed, this match was really good. You had Aichner hitting. So Gargano is also very good at selling, but he set up for Aichner very well. So he would try all these spring. You had Johnny Gargano going for all these springboard moves, these crossbodies, these moonsaults or whatever, planches. But because Aichner's a heavyweight now, he was the heaviest of the cruiserweights at the time, a power cruiserweight, similar to Tony Nese, but right now, Fabian Aichner has a lot more credibility than Tony Nese at this moment, because they build up Aichner as a strong in-ring threat. You would have Aichner catch Johnny Gargano out of midair and do all these power moves on him. But with some of those power moves, he would get some agility in it. He reminds me of a little, as far as his moveset is concerned. This is what Jeff Cobb kind of wishes he can do, and this is no shot against Jeff Cobb. Jeff Cobb is a very impressive big man amateur wrestler with some agility in his suplexes, but the difference between Fabian Aichner and Jeff Cobb is Fabian Aichner can do them a lot more smoothly. Of course, Fabian Aichner is against a lot smaller competition, and Jeff Cobb is trying to do these moves to heavyweight, so of course, it's different performance, but I just noted with Fabian Aichner as he's doing the moves a lot cleaner. And I saw Jeff Cobb on the Lucha Underground show do a lot of these moves to cruiserweights, and they still looked pretty clunky. So Aichner has a step up there. But going back to the match, you had Johnny Gargano, and this was another good story. So they had Johnny Gargano hitting the slingshot spear, which Mauro Ranallo pointed out defeated Riddick Moss a couple weeks ago, and Fabian Aichner kicked out, and Johnny Gargano after the match just looked very depressed, like he couldn't pull out the win. You had Gargano hitting a slingshot, pop-up DDT on Aichner, and getting the same two-count result, and Gargano showing more frustration. Then you had Gargano going for, so he uses La Mystica, which is what Mystico used to set up in Armbar, but Gargano uses it to set up the Gargano Escape. Aichner reversed it into La Magistral Cradle and picked up the roll-up win on Johnny Gargano. So Fabian Aichner defeated Johnny Gargano via pinfall in 6 minutes and 44 seconds of TV time, because there was a commercial break, I believe. Yes, there was at the beginning of the match. After the match, you had Mauro selling this as a huge upset because Aichner is new to the NXT scene. And Gargano's face continued to sell disappointment and the PTSD from being down on his luck. And yeah, it's so Aichner gets to look strong by defeating such an established singles wrestler in NXT. And they're telling this really good story with Johnny Gargano without Tommaso Ciampa even being in sight. They're building up to this Tommaso Ciampa versus Johnny Gargano match without Tommaso Ciampa even be. He could be in a different country right now, and they're still building this up very well. The story that they're doing here is after those near falls that Johnny Gargano would get after his finishers. They would have Mauro Ranallo, have Nigel McGuinness, have Percy Watson, and have the camera people focused on his facial expressions and talking about how he's very depressed and very fearful after not being able to put away his opponents as he once was able to do at one point when he was teamed up with Tommaso Ciampa. So what I like about this is, again, it's one, some of that very smart and intricate booking that they're doing in NXT these days, not insulting the viewer's intelligence. And they're making Johnny Gargano very relatable with this story. This story that they're telling with him goes into some real-life mental health issues that a lot of people at one point of their lives go through. I'm almost sure everyone, if you're rich, if you're poor, if you're going to some sort of struggle, everyone has to go through some struggle at some point, whether it be against, whether it be money problems, whether it be towards addiction problem, whether it be social, people go through real life mental health issues, and the story they're telling here has to deal with PTSD and depression, and it's shown to affect Johnny Gargano and affecting his performance in the ring. So very relatable story that they're telling here, and it's also building towards a showdown feud against Tommaso Ciampa. This is building up Tommaso Ciampa to be some very mean, strong heel down the road, especially when he beats up on the fan favorite, everybody's buddy, Johnny Gargano. This is going to be good. NXT, good writing so far. I mean, so far through this year. Now, let me take a little break from the audio review to talk to you guys about .NET membership. Of course, you get my NXT review, you get Jason Powell's WWE Raw, WWE SmackDown, his Impact Wrestling review, maybe once, twice a month if you're lucky. And you must be wondering, why don't you get these things every week? Well, that's because these audio reviews, we do put them out every day that there's a major pro wrestling show. It's just the .NET members get that as a benefit of their .NET membership. For the low price of $7.50 a month, you get full access to the .NET site, where you'll have access to our forums, you have ad-free access to the .NET site, but the bulk of your benefits come in the form of the audios you receive from ProWrestling.net, where we have WWE Raw, SmackDown, NXT, 205 Live, Lucha Underground, Impact Wrestling, Ring of Honor. All these shows are reviewed every day of the week. And we have our flagship show. That's our most popular podcast on the member side, where Jason Powell and a co-host go over all the major wrestling news of the week. And we also have every single pay-per-view covered on the member side, from WWE pay-per-views, Ring of Honor pay-per-views, even Impact Wrestling pay-per-views. There's one this week. And I can go more into .NET membership, but I don't want to take too much time off the audio review, so I would just recommend go check out .NET membership at least for a month. And if you do get interested in wanting to take us up on our annual option, you can bring the $7.50 price down to about $5.50 on average per month if you take us up, as I said, on the annual option. With that said, thank you so much for listening to me with the whole pitch for .NET membership, and let's get back into the NXT audio review. So we were taken to the commercial break, or before the commercial break, you had this was I thought this was kind of odd. Drew McIntyre was in Rhea Ripley's office, and he signed the contract, and I said, like, wasn't this supposed to happen in ring? Of course, they're setting this up that Andrade Almas will sign it in ring, but I thought it was pretty odd because usually in the contract signings you have both people sign it, and that will lead to some promos. I mean, I know why they did this, but it was a clunky way to get there. But at least they got there. It's a small nitpick that it can be easily glossed over because it led to something pretty solid anyway. After the commercial break, we got an Aleister Black cinematic where Black was doing his Indian pose in a Gothic church. This is like his lair. This looked straight from Lucha Underground because Aleister Black looks like he would be a character that would fit well in the Lucha Underground universe. Black said, and he was talking this time. Or he wasn't really talking, we really got a voiceover from him. He said, Clark, Patrick Clark, the Velveteen Dream, wishes to be loved and adored by many and wants to make a name for himself. Black said at NXT TakeOver Houston, That will be the day that the dream never forgets. Black said the dream wanted Black's attention, and now he's got it. Black then lifted his head to acknowledge the attention, and he lifted it out of meditation, and the candles in the church shrine blew out. After that cinematic, you had Nigel McGuinness telling us that Aleister Black will be facing Velveteen Dream at NXT TakeOver Houston. And then Mauro Ranallo plugged action figures. And going back to that cinematic, very good. Thumbs up there. Very Lucha Underground-y, but as a lot of wrestling promotions are learning these days, this cinematic approach, when not overdone in their universe, can be very effective. Impact Wrestling, TNA, GFW, whatever they're called, last year was a very good show, and one of the things they did was with some of their supernatural characters, like Decay, for example, they would give this cinematic treatment, and Aleister Black is a act who deserves that cinematic treatment because of the supernatural and power-y stuff behind his supernatural character. And going into this feud, Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream, every single week I just get shivers every time I see Aleister Black or Patrick Clark on my screen because this has to be hands down my favorite feud at this moment in professional wrestling. It's just so well written. I don't know why. And I didn't expect it. So if you look at the spoilers and you see, oh, look, it's Patrick Clark versus Aleister Black. Aleister Black's going to kill Patrick Clark and this is going to be a throwaway feud. But color me surprised. This is, as I mentioned, one of the most compelling and well-written storylines in professional wrestling today. I don't know how it got there. And who knew that Patrick freaking Clark would evolve into such a dark and very intricate character. And that this very dark reminds me a little bit of Goldust, but there's also a bit of Ravishing Rick Rude and a bunch of other things in it. And it meshes so well with the dark and gothic character of Aleister Black. The only thing I kind of fear, it's not really a fear, it's more of an anticipation to see how they get out of this, is I don't want to see Aleister Black or Patrick Clark lose this upcoming match or lose this feud because this feud has been so entertaining. Either this feud ends up getting stretched a little longer. Not to the point where it starts spinning its wheels, but every single week they find very innovative ways to add more chapters to this feud and not make anyone look weak. It's not necessary parody booking. It's just they're making there can each segment is building each other up without dragging the other person down. In turn, that's the problem with WWE main roster parody booking, is usually when they pull someone up, they have them pulled back down in the match right after. Whereas these Black and Velveteen Dream segments continue to build up. One week they'll build up Patrick Clark, but at the same time build Aleister Black with a squash match, but then have Patrick Clark do a beatdown, but have Aleister Black do his own set of revenge. Everything very productive. This is the best feud in professional wrestling, in my opinion, and the most surprising because I did not expect Patrick Clark to have discovered himself so quickly, and Aleister Black is very unique and very main roster ready. I almost don't want to see him on the main roster because the main roster isn't that great at handling a lot of these very cool characters. And on Patrick Clark's end, I'm not sure if the main roster will even allow him to have such a controversial and dark character. Like I said, it's the old school flamboyant Goldust-esque type character, but it's not copying Goldust by any means. It's just that type of twisted, if that's the word. But I'm not gonna harp or continue to sing the praises of this feud. I probably will next week once they have another fun and entertaining segment. I'm hyping myself up too much for that one for disappointment, but they haven't let me down so far. They then cut to the Street Profits. They were admiring a Maserati right outside of full, the performance center. Riddick Moss and Tino Sabatelli walked in and said, "That's our car." And Angelo Dawkins had the best reaction here. He said, "Like, our?" As in Riddick Moss and Tino Sabatelli somehow both own this single car. It was the proper reaction. And a good character moment for Angelo Dawkins because he's been the most sort of the most non-entertaining character of the Street Profits. Then they the two sort of just had some like bickering, and Moss and Sabatelli just said, "Don't touch our car." You had Montez Ford talking to the camera and said that Sabatelli and Moss are just hating on people who work hard. So it looks like they're setting up a quick undercard program between the two. I did think that Sabatelli and Moss looked a lot better character-wise this week because they were both dressed in suits. Sabatelli does still look like he's a guy trying to play pro wrestler. Moss was the one who looked a lot better because he wasn't a bit awkward on the mic and he wasn't making weird facial expressions. This is going to lead to a possible match between the two, and I would assume the Street Profits go over because they're the ones a little bit more ready for prime time at this point, or at least prime time on the NXT tag team scene. Moving along, let's see. We went back to Full Sail University, where Drew McIntyre was making his entrance for the contract signing. But before Drew could get to the ring, Andrade Almas blindsided him and put the boots and punches to him. He even lifted up the title at one point and aggressively tossed it at Drew McIntyre. Almas took the contract and signed it. He then took a piece of chewing gum out of the mouth of Zelina Vega and put it on the contract that so he can literally stick it to Drew McIntyre. That was the pun that Mauro Ranallo used, because he did. He used it as glue to put it on Drew McIntyre's suit. Drew McIntyre was writhing in pain heading into the commercial break. That was quick, effective, and very unique. Good job there for a interesting take on the contract signing. It also helps play into the Andrade Almas just don't give a F type of character. The only downside I just see between Almas and Drew McIntyre is they're building up the match to this match very well. The only problem is I think that they're pushing Andrade Almas to the title match a bit too soon. Like, he needed one more mid-card program to dominate before he got here. The reason why I think that is for the longest time, Andrade Almas was losing every single match to every single new wrestler that they brought into NXT, heel or babyface. Another problem I saw here was not too long ago. It might have been like 2 or 3 months ago, like right before Drew McIntyre won the NXT Championship. You had Andrade Almas losing in a squash match to Drew McIntyre, as in Drew McIntyre beat Andrade Almas in a one-sided match very quickly. It's memorable because it was disappointing because La Sombra versus Drew McIntyre would have been a dream match, but so the hype was very, or at least the hype for long-term wrestling fans was very high. So it was a bit disappointing to see Andrade Almas get squashed in just a few minutes. And even to NXT viewers who don't follow Drew Galloway or La Sombra on the independent scene, it wasn't too long ago that the squash match happened. It was right before Zelina Vega showed up. It might have been Andrade Almas's last match before Zelina Vega, or 2 matches before, because I remember his last match was against Cesar Bononi, my favorite NXT name to pronounce because of Bononi. I think they're getting to this too soon. There must be some sort of a long-term plan they have for either Drew or Almas. I don't think they should put the title belt on Almas yet because Drew McIntyre is such a strong flag bearer babyface that they did showcase a bit a couple weeks ago in Drew talking about his WWE release, but he has so many good promos in him to wave the flag of NXT, and Drew McIntyre having a championship belt, no matter what company he's in, enhances that belt. It gives it a lot of credibility because Drew McIntyre treats it as the most coveted and most important thing in the world to both him and other people. So I believe there's still more that they can get out of the Drew McIntyre championship reign. What usually helps put the title in jeopardy is Drew McIntyre, despite being a giant big man who towers over most of his opponents, he is really good at selling. He was really good at selling in this segment, and he's really good at selling to people smaller than him. It's surprising. Drew McIntyre is he, I, there, if that's truly what Vince McMahon thought in the day, he was right. Drew McIntyre is the mold, the prototype of what a top-tier babyface in a professional wrestling company should be, because he this has all the check boxes you need, from a wrestling ability, the look, the passion, and the relatability. Even though he's a giant, he relates to everyone who struggles, who goes, who believes in something, who has a dream. Drew McIntyre. We haven't seen the best of Drew McIntyre yet, even though he's been pretty solid as the NXT champion so far. Moving along, we had a commercial break, and we were shown the Marmosets. They were the second band providing the official theme song for NXT TakeOver Houston. Mauro Ranallo then ran over the card of the NXT TakeOver Houston show, which now had Drew McIntyre versus Andrade Cien Almas added to it for the NXT Championship. Nigel then cut to footage of Peyton Royce and Billie Kay at the Performance Center. They were doing their Mean Girl act and ranting about how Billie Kay was not in the Fatal 4-Way for the Women's Championship. Kay and Royce then mocked Kairi Sane's pirate thing, and Kairi Sane walked in from behind with her navigator wheel, and then she just pointed her elbow at Billie Kay, which scared Billie Kay to death. Billie Kay was really good in selling the fear there. Sane just smiled, saluted, and walked off. Royce then asked Kay why did she point the elbow at her. Mauro then used this to segue to an advertisement for Billie Kay versus Kairi Sane for next week. Thumbs up for NXT. They do this right before the main event match all the time. Advertise the matches for next week. So now you're looking forward to what's going to happen next week. Kairi Sane versus Billie Kay. That's pretty much worth it. Back to Full Sail, Sanity made their entrance, sans Killian Dain and Nikki Cross, who weren't there. That was because William Regal had banned them from ringside. Given Sanity's history, even though they're babyfaces now, for the long and good attention to detail here, William Regal hasn't forgotten that Sanity, the other guys, usually interfere in tag team matches. So continuity. NXT is so good right now, and William Regal, he's probably the hands down best authority figure in pro wrestling. At one point, it was Dario Cueto, but Lucha Underground has gone a little bit too overboard with Dario Cueto, making him like the singular strongest character on that show. William Regal, he's simple, effective, and he again, there's that word I use where. Or that phrase I use where he's not insulting the viewer's intelligence. He's acknowledging the bad things the heels do, and as a person running a company, he tries to rectify those issues by trying to put in some safeguards. He did this when he was trying to protect the tag team partners of Lars Sullivan, and then you had Lars Sullivan finding a creative way of continuing to beat up his tag team partners, which was I thought was pretty funny. You have William Regal acknowledging that Nikki Cross was screwed out of her championship title shot, And instead of giving her a title shot or putting her in some contrived loophole, jumping through hoops match, he found a way to seamlessly transition her into a second chance where Tainara Conti or Adam Cole can interfere. William Regal, the voice of reason, but he doesn't go too overboard. It's just simple, effective booking. It's just like the rest of the NXT show. Now, also after Sanity came out, you had the authors of Pain coming out. You had Paul Ellering ordering them to the ring, but he didn't join them, which Nigel McGuinness would point out later on. So handling the formal ring introductions was Caleb Braxton. And I thought it was a little bit odd because Mike Rome is usually the formal ring introductioner, if that's even a word. Mike Rome, he's one of the WWE's best ring announcers at the moment, and a bit conspicuous to not see him on NXT at the moment. Maybe he got called up to the main roster. If so, he deserves it. Mike Rome, from my experience seeing him as a NXT MC at live events, very talented ring announcer. So, the main event match of this episode was Eric Young and Alexander Wolf, Sanity, versus the authors of Pain, Akam and Rezar. There was no one at ringside. And this match, while not as good as their last encounter, the NXT TakeOver match, it was still very good by the end. Eric Young tends to work a little bit better as a baby face. He was doing a really good job as the crazy heel in TNA by the end of his run, but in NXT he hasn't had strong performances as a heel, where he works a lot better when firing up for hot tags and rallying up the crowd. And Alexander Wolf has this weird charisma to him that we discovered all of a sudden. He dances in the ring, and because he's so quirky, people just love him. He's kind of like Big E in that sense. But Big E Langston. So the ending of this match, you had it looked like the authors of Pain were going to win the thing because they hit Sanity with the Super Collider. That's the double power bomb they do with the tap. And then they hit Eric Young with the Last Chapter. Before the three count could happen, you had Adam Cole running in, breaking up the pin. And so Sanity's versus the Authors of Pain ended in a no contest in about 7 minutes and 29 seconds of TV time because there was a commercial break. And I noted that it was a no contest because you had Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, and Bobby Fish running in and attacking everyone. Because both tag teams were pairs, you had the Undisputed Era always having a 3-on-2 advantage, depending on who they were against, and they overpowered both teams in there. Killian Dane eventually made his way out, but he was too late. Everyone was laid out, so it allowed the Undisputed Era to beat up Killian Dane 3-on-1. All of a sudden, you had Adam Cole running out, and you had the Undisputed Era at first striking a fighter's pose because they didn't know what Roderick Strong was going to do. And Roderick Strong showed that he had their armband and that he was accepting their membership as a part of the Undisputed Era. And of course, Adam Cole was ecstatic. Like, yeah, we got a new member. A newest member of the not NWO slash Elite slash DX. But of course, this was a swerve because pro wrestling, and you had Roderick Strong put it like this sort of beating up Adam Cole, causing Adam Cole to retreat to the ringside. But Red Dragon was in the ring, and they were trying to double team Roderick Strong. But then the Authors of Pain teamed up with Roderick Strong so to send Red Dragon out because now it was 3-on-2 because Adam Cole was not long gone, but waiting far away at ringside. William Regal came out and said there was like lots of madness happening here, and he talked about how in order to stop this, he was booking a three-way trios match between Sanity, the Authors of Pain, with Roderick Strong and the Undisputed Era at NXT TakeOver Houston. He then put a little twist because there was a lot of chaos here. There was one way that they can contain it was to bring out a match that hasn't been used in 20 years. So William Regal announced that the match was going to happen in two rings and that this match was going to be a War Games match. So and also when William Regal made his entrance, the video wall behind him said NXT TakeOver Houston. A fire switched over that title, saying that they were rebranding the show, and now the show is called NXT TakeOver War Games. So there we go. There's the big announcement. A bit clunky in the way that they got the Authors of Pain and Roderick Strong together, but because it led to such a big announcement of the War Games thing, it's forgivable. The only thing clunky is, what did Roderick Strong have to gain from joining the Undisputed Era? He's Mr. White Meat Babyface, and it's not like he was really losing a lot of matches. He lost the NXT Championship match, but it was in a match that he could have easily have won himself because he just lost by a hair. It's not like the Undisputed Era introduced themselves as a possible tool that he can use to get to the NXT Championship. Given how it seems like Adam Cole is built up as the leader there, I know there's not a lot of logic of Roderick Strong meshing with the Undisputed Era, aside from all four of those guys being former ROH guys. And do they want to acknowledge a ROH stable? Another thing I thought was pretty odd, or I think that has been pretty odd, is the build to the Undisputed Era. Where at first I thought they were going to build them as strong, badass heels, aka similar to the Shield. And I don't think because the Shield reform on the main roster that it changed their plans. I just think this is a little bit of Adam Cole's influence, maybe. It's just at least at this point showing that Adam Cole doesn't mesh too well with Red Dragon just yet. They're fine. It just seems like Adam Cole is almost setting up shop as the curator of the NXT branch of the Young Bucks' elite stable, because Adam Cole was a part of Bullet Club Elite, which is what the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes are doing at the moment. Adam Cole was, I think, the de facto leader in the ROH branch of that, and he's just bringing that over to NXT. So a bit odd and a bit forced, but NXT TakeOver War Games, it should be fun because the one thing that almost ensures funness from this is NXT TakeOvers never ever disappoint. I can't remember a bad TakeOver. Can you? Can anyone really name a disappointing TakeOver? Because there's always some sort of good match, no matter what takeover it is, whether it be a women's division match, whether it be tag team division, whether it be in the main event scene. NXT takeovers are always top tier. And this episode, very good NXT episode. I'm very delighted to have followed up that terrible 205 Live day that involved a match involving it was lots of candy corn, pumpkins, and Mustafa Ali trying to stick Twix in people's mouths for some reason. Tonight I get a very strong NXT, very entertaining NXT episode that is the epitome of efficiency. More, this other pro wrestling company should take note and not take it as a shot that their shows aren't working, but take it as a lesson as to how to maximize their booking time in a short amount of time, how to make every week productive, how to make every segment productive, and getting the most out of that 1 hour. It's not impossible. With that, I'll leave you guys adieu because this review is taking a long, but it's taking a long time because this was such a good episode with lots of stuff done. That's just what NXT does. I will be back next week. Yeah, usually I'm back with my Lucha Underground audio review, and I still haven't done it. I'll be back with my Lucha Underground audio review sometime. I'll try to maybe get it done this week. end. Maybe it'll be by next week. It's this it was a 2-hour episode, and I might have to end up watching it again. But I'll be back. Trust me on that. And I'll be back tomorrow, written form, with my Impact Wrestling written review. With that said, thank you so much for being .NET members. And it's because of you guys that we put out this audio and written stuff and prowrestling.net. Have a nice one. Bye-bye.